Puranjana Puram Yada
Puranjana Puram Yada
Artum Are Pire Tatra
Artum Are Pire Tatra
Pratyashedhat Prajagara
Pratyashedhat Prajagara
Chandaveka
of
Chandaveka.
Chandaveka.
Anuchara,
Anuchara
followers. Puranjana,
Puranjana
of King Puranjana.
Puram
city.
City.
Yada,
Yada
when.
Haratum
to plunder.
Are
pire began.
Tatra
there. Pratyashedhat defended. Prajagara the big serpent. Translation. When King Gandharvaraj Chandavega and his followers began to plunder the city of Puranjana, a snake with five hoods began to defend the city. Purport. When one is sleeping, the life air remains active in different dreams. The five hoods of the snake indicate that the life air is surrounded by five kinds of air, known as prana, apana, vyana, udana, and samana. When the body is inactive, the prana, or the life air, is active. Up to the age of 50, one can actively work for sense gratification. But after the 50th year, one's energy decreases. Although one can with great strain, work for two or three more years, perhaps up to the 55th year. Thus, the 55th year is generally taken by government regulations as the final year for retirement. The energy, which is fatigued after 50 years, is figuratively described herein as the serpent of five hoods. So the living entity here then is very enthusiastic, trying to create nice situations, trying to expand, trying to be absorbed in the various situations of life. And in this way, life just gradually disappears. imperceptibly. The idea is that we have the field of activities, and these fields are there for our enjoyment. So we use our intelligence, we use our experience, we use our endeavors, how to gain something, how to see what are the best possibilities. Right? When we're younger, we don't see such great possibilities. Right? You know, there's something to eat, there's a few rocks to pick up, some sticks, right? You know, you can be kings, you can be so many different things like that. But with time, then we find that there's more and more ways we can actually engage the senses. Because if you notice, the little children, though they're engaging the senses, the more they're engaging the mind. So for them, is the experience of it is the most important, and relationships are the most important, right? When the children see someone else, then first thing they do is try to create contact, try to create relationships, so there can be interaction, right? Because that interaction, that will be where happiness will be found, right? Of course, then one has to train them who to interact with and that. And then with time, we see that just, you know, a few sticks and rocks aren't enough, right? Then you need to have all nice fancy things, fashionable things, nice facilities and all this. And not necessarily that they specifically will make you happy, but they will make it look like you're happy. Because everyone else will think, if I have these, I'll be happy. So if you have them, then we say, I'm happy, right? So gradually we start to shift our focus on what is enjoyment from being the emotional based on interaction of relationships, you know, positive interaction, to actually just creating a field in which we can enjoy. So we become more and more expert at what are the opportunities for enjoyment. But factually speaking, enjoyment gets less and less. You know, we may contest that. What do you mean? No, I have so much more. Yes, you have more, but you're not doing more with it. Right? Let a child out anywhere, and immediately things are happening. Things are going on. They're immediately interacting. They're immediately experiencing. Right? It doesn't matter where they are. But for the adult, then no, everything just has to be right and be perfect and everything like that. I work hard for the situations. That'll take any opportunity to gain. But to actually use the situation, that then everything has to be perfect and then this and that, and it never quite works out. So actually adults don't enjoy very much at all. But, of course, you know, that's not going to go down well with the ego. But, you know, in this situation, in this class, we can say whatever we want. But in reality, socially, you just don't say this kind of stuff. People don't appreciate it. Why? Because then it means I'm working very hard. I'm creating so much facility. And I'm not actually happier for it. So really, what's the use of my endeavoring? Right? Because I could just, you know, with my few friends and chant and take prasad and do service and be satisfied. Right? But then that would take very little, I mean, that would lead very minimal material facility. But the modern society is defining that, no, the more material facility you have, the more happy you'll be. Therefore, we don't want to look backwards or, you know, out of it. Oh, that's so, you know, last year. No, we want to be right up to date. We have to have the latest and the greatest and that. And then we're happy. Supposedly. That's the idea. Unfortunately, it doesn't work. Otherwise, we would have a whole society full of very happy people. Right? Because they're chanting Hare Krishna and they have all kinds of nice facility. But unfortunately, it's not happening. Because what do? The time for being with family, friends, and sadhana is spent on trying to arrange facility. And so in this way, as is mentioned here, then Chandavega, he slowly, slowly, imperceptibly just takes the life away, day by day. Right? And so just, that's it. He doesn't do it in one big, you know, fight. He just, day by day, takes away. One day at a time. Right? That's all. That's all he has to do. Because we'll think, oh, there's so many days. But each day, one more day goes. and then another day, and another day, and then very soon, there aren't many days. So that's just how he works. So here is the life heirs then are defending, right? We put our energy, we try to maintain everything. Everything's going down, but we put in our energy, no, keep it up, keep it nice, keep it good. But actually, eventually, Chandavega here, he always wins, right? Always. Like that. Like, you know, we're alone, and we have, okay, we have this snake here working for us, but he has 360 soldiers, right? And all of their friends. So that's 720 people, right? So gradually it just goes. So these things are brought out not because we're trying to create a, you know, doomsday kind of environment, right? It's popular. Religionists love to create a doomsday environment, you know. Sit around, look at their watch, and say, okay, time's here. Then they chant, now is the end of the world, right? But somehow that never happens. So, okay, we'll try another day. But unfortunately, it doesn't inspire people. Okay, it makes them think for a moment about their position, but there's no inspiration. So the Bhagavatam not being based on ignorance, then it's a matter of where we have energy, we're going to apply energy. That's the meaning of being a living entity, right? Jiva means active. Energy means active. There's no such thing as inactive energy. It's always active energy. So then it's a matter of the living entity taking this energy and applying it in a positive way that you actually get benefit for. Since we're going to work hard anyway, and whatever you do will be just as much difficulty, so one might as well get some eternal benefit from it. That would be intelligent, right? If you can get many things done at once with the same effort, why get less? So Bhagavatam's pointing out is that if one is God conscious in the endeavor, then the endeavor gives so much more than just the facility for sense gratification. Right? So the idea is that Paranjana is wasting his time because he's only getting one result. And even though he has nice result, this wonderful city filled with all kinds of relatives and all that, you know, nice facilities, but unfortunately, it's going away. Right? They're all trying to, it's just day by day getting less and less and less. Right? The next generation will go on, they'll enjoy, and then one feels, yes, this is very good. But ultimately, then it goes, and our connection with even that family doesn't continue. So, here then Narad Muni is trying to bring attention of Maharaj Prachinda Bharhishat that you're making this endeavor, but the results you're getting are very minimal. So you should improve the quality of this by adding Krishna consciousness, right? This is what we see is going on in all the texts. It's not some change. Means, okay, one would have to admit, yes, for a tribal, there's a bit more of a change, right, than for a human being. A human being, simply all it is they live a proper sattvic lifestyle. They you know, it's regulated by scripture, by guru, by the social, you know, situation. So now all it is adding that, they're adding God consciousness, they're adding that the guru is spiritual, the scriptures are spiritual, the lifestyle focuses on the spiritual. So actually, for them, there's zero change in the lifestyle. But for the tribals, of course, then the lifestyle and ignorance, then with time needs to be improved up to the mode of goodness. Otherwise, it's always very disturbing, right? It means we're chanting our rounds. Okay, if we're chanting in goodness, passion, or ignorance, then it's just a matter of how much benefit we're going to get. We're chanting, we're not absorbed like that. But still, it's nice, you're associating with Krishna. So it just means the effect you're getting is much less. But still, it's transcendental. But on the social platform, if you're functioning in ignorance instead of goodness, then the results, the reactions are so emotionally stressful that they don't really make for a worthwhile life. So therefore, the Shastras recommend the purification of the lifestyle. That means eating, sleeping, mating, defending is going on, but in a way that's regulated, a way that's progressive. Interactions with others is based on something that's progressive. One's economics is progressive. One's health is progressive. Everything becomes connected to God consciousness. Right? So then it becomes very easy when one comes to this platform like Paranjana. Now he's lived this life. Now it's time to the endeavors for increasing facility, the endeavors for trying to enjoy that facility is over. Now it's a matter of just that basic lifestyle with the focus on the sadhana, on the association with devotees, on the association of being absorbed, you know, in Krishna consciousness. That's the point now, right? Because motive passion is there, then it works, basically 16 to 50. And then after that, it doesn't work so good anymore. So the recommendation is one should adjust. One should retire from actively trying to increase the facility, increase the social standing, the economics. But one should now put the focus on other things. Right? So that is the recommendation. Otherwise, then, for all that endeavor, there'll be minimal return. Any questions on this? No questions. Yes.
How you can work up to 50 years, perhaps up to the 55th year. How society today, in England at least, 64 years old. And now they've even put it up a few more years. A couple of years ago, they put it up even a few more years.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole life is they're squeezing every little bit out of you. You know, yes. 60, when you're 67, what are you going to do? Squeeze and squeeze.
Well, just look at it this way. If you've been working till you're 67, you'll have a good bank balance, and then you'll be able to personally go pick out your own coffin, right? You know, before you die, you know. You'll be able to go and get that nice one with the extra, you know, brass trim and, you know, nicely varnished and, you know, like that kind of thing. No, it's sad that they're trying to get more and more. That's just what is meant by human. One of the symptoms of human life is the protection of old men, right? Because women are protected throughout the whole life. Men are protected in the brahmacharya and when they're old. In between, then they're the ones that are supposed to do the protection. So, because both of these times are meant for spiritual focus. The brahmachari is supposed to be able to focus spiritually, not worry about anything. The old man is supposed to be able to focus spiritually and not worry about other things. One is one can't really worry about. I mean, you can worry about, but you can't really do anything about it, right? So it's just like we see is that if you're separated from someone, then that's bad. But if they're present and you can't interact with them, that's worse, right? That's the increase in that element of separation, right? Kurukshetra is considered, therefore, the highest form of separation because Krishna's there, but the Brajavasis can't interact with him like they do in Braj, so that's worse. So that you have a problem for facility as, you know, an active person, then that's already a difficulty. But when you're actually too old to endeavor for it, and still you have to worry about it, that's worse. So it's actually a very, very unfortunate situation. So that's why human society has to focus that all these five are protected. The Brahmins, the cows, the Brahmacharis, the women, and the old men. When that's there, you actually have human society. Because then the values of human life can be cultivated. Because if not cultivated as a Brahmachari, you don't, you know, then you're not going to be a good grihastha. Then if women are protected, you're not going to get good children. There's not going to be a good social environment. The social environment is dependent on the quality of the understanding or practice of the women. You know, the old man means that he's preparing for going back to Godhead. Also the old man, then he's free to actually be available to give association advice on how to engage the practical life in Krishna consciousness. Right? Because now when one's retired from that, one can look at it in a very broad way, very deep way. Right? Cows then provide milk, which is then so essential for refining the brain tissues. Right? Milk is very important. You know, that also for yajna, for all these different things. The milk is essential for Brahminical culture. So, and the Brahmins, then they give the education, the direction, so that everyone knows what to do. When these are in place, then you actually can have human society, right? It's not based on trying to be good, be nice. It's based on those five are in place and protected. Then one can actually, within that, be good and be nice. But to be good and be nice separate actually never happens. It sounds great. It's a great concept, great theory. But historically, we see it just doesn't work like that. So it's a sad point that one tries to get more and more, you know. But it's interesting. The youth who are interested to work, they can't work, right? It means that you can't work until you're like 18 or like that. But children who are not, let's say, so academically inclined, they're willing to work from 12 or 14, 16, but they're not allowed to work. But then the old men who would rather not be working, they have to work, right? So this is symptom of the mode of ignorance. So everything gets turned upside down like that. You should be able to work because then they'll produce more, and the old ones should be able to retire so they can focus on spiritual endeavor. Is that okay? Yeah. Very bottom, little dinky thing on the bottom.
In Bhagavatam, we see that when Yayati, King Yayati, got cursed to become prematurely old, he requested his sons to take his old age for him.
Right.
And his concept was that unless one has satisfaction in Grihastha Ashram, it's impossible to be renounced. So
right.
You could comment on that.
On that, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Means the idea is that, Siddha means the living entity is the servant of the Lord. The jiva is the servant of the Lord. His natural position is that of servant. So his only happiness, the only satisfaction is interacting with the Lord. That sharing of happiness with the Lord is what is there. Sometimes we get the idea that, no, if we enjoy at all, we're happy at all, there's something wrong with it. It's not spiritual. It's not Krishna conscious. No, that's the Mayavadi concept. You know, just to make that very clear. No, the devotional concept is being happy is fine. That's because Sachi Ananda. What is Ananda going to do? That's 33% of our existence. You know, our just entity, right? So happiness is there. The problem is when it's not shared with Krishna. Because being part and parcel of Krishna, therefore we being Ananda, he's the unlimited Ananda. So when our Ananda is connected with his Ananda, then that's glorious. And the living entity, no living entity is actually outside of Krishna. We like to create this duality that there's God way over there, and then there's the reality of us here. No, it's the reality of everything that's here is God. And whatever you are trying to squeeze out of anything, you're actually only aware of Krishna. But you don't know it's Krishna, you think it's the form. Right? So therefore, we think that, let's say, something comes, let's say, from wealth. We think it's actually the flat paper, the flat money that's actually wealth. But no, it's Krishna. He enters that, and it has that. So it has that attraction, it has that power. You can take a piece of paper and go somewhere and do what you want. But pieces of paper won't do that. You know, otherwise, then, you know, the kids just get all the monopoly money and go down and get whatever they want. But it doesn't work. You know, so Krishna's entered that. So we think it's the money. So even though we could in a moment surrender, then we don't. I mean, those who do, yes, the process is done. But for those who haven't, so in other words, if we, in coming in contact with Krishna consciousness, didn't surrender in that moment, then we know we're in the second category in the Gita, which means following the process of sadhana. Right? So then the idea is we think that these forms are what is giving my happiness, not actually Krishna. So we think it's the family is giving, the wife, the children, the home, my furniture, my vehicles, my money, my security, you know, my position in society, my position in administration, you know, or how I'm recognized, my knowledge, my sacrifice. So all these different, or, you know, even my age. So all these different things are, we take that is what's real, has substance, rather than, no, it's Krishna. He's the maturity of age. Krishna is that pleasantness of the child or the intimacy of the wife. Krishna is the security of the house or the money, or Krishna is the power in the position. So therefore the idea is that it will never be otherwise. And the person who has been trained, we see as a brahmachari, then he knows all this. One who fully understands or realizes it remains as a brahmachari. One who understands it, but the realization is not complete, he gets married. And then as a married person, he practices this knowledge to get the realization. Right? So now, what is it? Yayati will take the youth, and then, you know, it's said that he enjoyed his senses to the utmost of his ability in whatever way was possible, right? But all according to religious principles. Because if you don't enjoy your senses according to religious principles, you can't actually enjoy to the fullest. And if you don't enjoy to the fullest, then there'll always be the speculation, well, I could have done that, then I would have been happy, right? I did this, I got married, I had the family, it didn't quite work out. So actually, it was because it wasn't the right woman, or we weren't in the right place, or we weren't in the right house, or we didn't have enough money, or we were too strict, or we weren't strict enough, or we'll always speculate that, well, if I'd just done that, then it would have been perfect. So the Vedic concept, the reason that the Vedas then give all this detail is so that, no, this is as good as it gets. You do this, mechanics, then you will get the maximum experience from the sensual and emotional platform that is possible to get. You can't get more than that because it's a material world. Like, you know, it's just like I have one lemon, I can only squeeze so much juice out of it. I can't say, oh, I got a lemon, I can get, you know, 5 liters of juice out of this. No, you'll get so many drops, that's it. You get a teaspoon, a tablespoon, you know, like that. But if it's not a good lemon, then you get a few drops. So that's the point. Impious means you get a few drops. Pious means you get a spoon out of it, like that. So now, he know has the knowledge, right? And he applies himself. And so he spends his time with his wives. He spends his time out hunting. He spends his time eating good food, dressing nicely, doing everything to the fullest. And then you can compare and see, yeah, there is nothing here. That's the idea. You want to finish off the mental speculation that, well, if I had just done that, then it would have been good. No. He did it all, and then it's, no. And what was his comment when he gave back the youth to his son? He said, now I am satisfied that you cannot be satisfied on the material platform. Right? Because we're thinking, no, I can be satisfied. If I just make this adjustment, I can be satisfied. So the actual point of the material endeavor is to be satisfied. You can't be satisfied. Then the full attention goes into spiritual life. Then one can move into that first category, right? You know, fully surrendering. That's the idea. So the Vedas means this is what the mode of ignorance does. It makes irreligion look like religion. Now this is the good thing to do. And religion, which the Vedics say, is irreligion. No, that doesn't work. And the fun part is that the modern culture, being so dedicated to sense gratification and facility, it actually doesn't get very good facility, you know? This year when we went and traveled around, you see facility is getting less and less. The gizmos are getting a little bit better. But the problem is people, their dress, their interaction, their happiness, it's getting less and less. You can just see it when you go down the street. You know, it's not, nobody's interacting, no one's doing this and that. And this idea of the, you know, the world community altogether. I was shocked. I was sitting there, sitting in London. You know, car stops at some place at the light. And some guy's talking on the phone and all that. And he breaks away from the crowd and all that. And he was not speaking English. You know, and then all these, they're not speaking English. You know, they say they're in England, they're not speaking English. They're not speaking with an English accent. They don't care about these. I told some elements that are typical English things as jokes. Nobody in the audience got it. I mean, nobody. It was just, I was thinking, wow, okay, you know. It's just, it's gone. You know, so then it's, this idea that they bring together, and you see that people are making their little groups, but they're groups according to the ethnicity. You know? It's not according to this world flavor of everyone together. Yeah, in a few circles, a few intellectuals like that, they hang out like that. But everybody else is not like that. And that little intellectual group is the minority. I mean, of course, they think they are the world, you know, like that, because you have to remember those guys were the hippies that used to think at Woodstock we are the world, right? So it's not. The me generation didn't figure it out, you know? You understand me generation? Me generation, they're the baby boomers, the ones after World War II and all that, when it was like that. But they used to call them baby boomers, but then they figured out that they're so self-centered and think they know everything that they call them the me generation instead of the baby boomers, the boomers, because it's more descriptive of their attitude. You sure? Oh, no, because I was studying a thing that said that was there. And this one that's there has got some other names for it. Oh, well, whatever. Okay, so the idea is that it's not that we are interested in sense gratification, but the point is the senses have to be engaged. So therefore, since they're being engaged, engage them in a pious way that has the facility to connect it to the Lord. Because otherwise, yes, you can connect an impious activity to the Lord, but that's like saying, I'll cook a potato subji with a half-rotten potato for Krishna. Why would you do that? You'd use a good potato for Krishna. Right? So that's the idea, is that these things are there. But then the problem is those who are pro-Vedic, they make the same mistake as those who are not pro-Vedic, right? Because Niyamagraha works, you know, has the same mechanics. That they take it that the form that the Vedic gives is the important thing. No, the form is only the medium through which you get the experience. But the point is it's the Krishna consciousness is important. If you're not Krishna conscious, even pious work, Vedic work, has no value. Right? Because here, Prachina Barishat is pious. He's doing everything right, and it's not good enough. That's why the story's in Bhagavatam. Right? Because you don't have to, if the person's life is impious, we don't have to get into such detail. We have such examples. Magrari the hunter. Right? You just have to, he goes out, half kills the animals and stuff like that. You don't have to get into more detail. You don't have to say, he doesn't take a bath regularly and doesn't brush his teeth and he's got, you know, BO and his breath smells and, you know, his interaction with his wife is a bit rough and, you know, you don't have to get into that, right? But the piety, you get into it and show that he's doing everything perfectly, it's still not enough. So that's the point of Yayati, is that we see, because that comes in a later, is that he's done everything, it's not enough. Here we're bringing out the point is that material life just isn't worth it. But then in Yayati is pointing out is then even on the emotional platform, yes, you do get something out of material endeavor, but it still does not compare to the spiritual endeavor. Is that okay? Yeah.
Makes us always forget. We hear, we get the understanding that there is no taste in material life, and then we slide it back to the same thing again and again.
Prabhupada mentioned the Panchadvipa that it's habit. Like Panchadvipa is with Prabhupada on the train, like that. So you can get, it means I don't know now, but you used to be able to get these coupes, means it's just two beds and it's closed in and everything. So you got your own private. So he was there and he was like the servant traveling with Prabhupada. I'm not sure where they were going. But you know, it'd either be, you know, between Bombay and Delhi or Calcutta, one of those. So they're sitting inside and as the car starts going, you start getting this, you know, you can see things and then it starts going into a blur, right? Because you're not really focusing. And then as he's, you know, just sitting there looking and it's all going to a blur, then suddenly, he notices without thinking, there's a young girl on the platform, an attractive girl. His mind just focuses and he actually sees the girl, though everything else is a blur. So then so he turns to Prabhupada and says, how is that? How does that work? Right, you know, because I wasn't even thinking about it. How does it happen? Prabhupada just said, no, it's just habit. We've been practicing since time immemorial how to find how to find opportunities for sense gratification in whatever situation we're in. So that's the first thing we'll do, is find those opportunities. So when we say you don't have to change, means we just first take it that those opportunities, how to connect them to Krishna. Does that make sense? So you don't have to change, because you're in a situation, you can't change the situation. So, but in the situation, you're going to, according to your values, view the situation to see what opportunities are there. But what you change is, are those opportunities for me or for Krishna? Right? So now, if it's for me, then you have certain ones you want. If it's for Krishna, then it may be those, it may be some others, because every situation has so many opportunities. And then, if it's for Krishna, so that'll be the first stage. Then you engage that in Krishna service. Then the next stage is this my duty? Right? Because piety means I engage the opportunities in the situation that are within my duty. Does that make sense? So, therefore, is it my duty? So then that will bring it to a proper stage. Right? Does that make sense? Then once that happens, then the next stage is, okay, now I'm doing this, now it's for Krishna, it's pious, Krishna's getting, you know, it's being done for Krishna, it's favorable, right? Because the first one may not be favorable. If it's just for me, it may be impious, it's not necessarily favorable. Pious is favorable to Krishna. But it may be mixed, because, you know, I'm getting benefit, you know, and Krishna's getting benefit, right? Then the next stage is, okay, well, how would I look at this that it's only Krishna getting benefit? In other words, how does it come to pure devotional service, right? So it goes from sinful to pious. That pious is mixed, right? And so then, means in other words, it's lower quality mixed devotional service, higher quality mixed devotional service, and then pure devotional service. That's the stages one takes it through. All by looking at the situation you're in and seeing what are the opportunities. But we're used to looking at the opportunities for, you know, the first two. We're not practiced at looking at it for the pure devotional service. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of practice with time. Anything you do, you'll want to do it again. That's the secret of karma. So if you do a material activity, the desire to do that again will come up. Right, that's the seeds. That's what it mentions, that you can get rid of the reaction, but you can't get rid of the seeds by any material method. So even though the person has purified themselves and acting on a very pure platform, these seeds come up. And then even the most pious person does some nonsense. That's just the way it works. You know, we get so shocked. How does this happen? And that, as if the material world is real, you know, as if it has some value. You know, that being pious is a real substance. No, being Krishna conscious is substance. So devotional service is the only thing that will get rid of those seeds. But now, in the same way as I do an activity, if it's impious, I have the desire to do that impious activity. If it's pious, I have the desire to do that pious activity again. If it's Krishna conscious, I have the desire to do the Krishna conscious activity again. You understand? So therefore, then now he's done something in this, going back to the example. He's questioned why it is he's looking for opportunities for sense gratification. So now that will create the desire to question again the field of enjoyment. Right? So now if you continue, you cultivate that, that becomes the prominent. So all you're doing is questioning, why would I be enjoying this? Why, you know, but then the next stage is then, as we see with the yat, is then pious engagement. So how to engage that? Does that make sense? And then, but pure devotion is what you're actually trying to get to. So that's why you go through these stages. That's why Krishna recommends these stages. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of you cultivate that, okay, this opportunity is there, I don't want to take it. Though normally I would, but I won't, because there is a more Krishna conscious option. Then one, you'll get the benefit of that devotional activity, and two, you'll get the desire to use that similar situation or a similar opportunity in devotional service as opposed to material. Right? It doesn't mean that the desire to use it materially is still not there. For some time it'll be there until by the power of devotional service it goes away. So there may be occasions where one doesn't use it properly. But that's not the end of the world. No, it's just a matter, no, use it properly. See what I'm saying? It means we take the material world too seriously. One, in that we can enjoy, but how much we think we can enjoy in the world is how much we think that we're, you know, we're a rat bag because it's real. You know what I'm saying? A mirage is not good or bad. It's just a mirage. You can't get anything good out of it. You can't get anything bad out of it. Does that make sense? But as long as we identify with it, therefore we look at, okay, what's pious and impious. But actually, the material world is just basically useless. The whole thing is impious if it's not connected to Krishna. You understand? Because if we're doing something that would be socially accepted as something good, even though it's not Krishna conscious, we generally don't harass ourselves about it. You understand? But it's just as useless as an activity that's not socially acceptable. You know what I'm saying? As far as being Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? On its own. Now, the more socially accepted, that generally is supposed to have a better use in Krishna consciousness. But on its own, it doesn't actually have any value. Right? Just like I have money, technically it has no spiritual value unless I use it for Krishna. Otherwise, it's just money. Now, I may use it for a pious work or I may use it for an impious work. So I'll say the pious is better than the impious. Yes, on the material platform it is, but materially both are useless. It only becomes a value when you use that money for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Something else? Yes.
My question is... We hear this philosophy, we even understand this philosophy, but just like Lord Narayan has a life, Indra has a life, many, many sages, even those who perform tapasyas in the forest, they have a wife, and all demigods have a wife. So they also know the philosophy, even Agni has a wife, Svaha, they all have them. So what is the value of them to have them? Like,
What is the value of
the demigods? Because they all have wives.
No, I understand that.
And all the sages, practically, we hardly find sages without wife, only Narada Muni maybe, and like this.
Tapaloka, there's no wives.
Yes, so why do they have wives even though they know all the philosophy and they connected to Krishna?
No, but what is the philosophy?
Philosophy of...
Yes, what's the philosophy here? What it means when you say... You're thinking of a specific point when you say they know the philosophy. So what is it that they know?
They know that the world is temporary and everything will end one time. And the Krishna is the supreme maintainer and the founder, like...
But that means, okay, so your problem is that they have a wife. What about shoes? Are shoes all right? Because shoes will end also. Right? They have cloth. That'll also end. You know what I'm saying? There was one very hairy sage, Prabhupada told this story. He was so hairy. I mean, he was not just on his head, his whole body. He was hairy. Right? And once in, I think, a lifetime of Brahma, one hair would fall out. And when all the hairs fall out, he'll die. So he's sitting down next to the river where he stays. And someone asked him that, why don't you build yourself a house? A hut to live in because of the elements. He turned to them and said, life is so temporary. You know what I'm saying? So why is it the wife is a problem but the shoes are not, The wooden shoes, bugs can eat them, jackals love to run off with them, chew on them. Termites eat them also. You know what I'm saying? So, see, the thing what you missed here is you're taking it that wife means sense gratification. You understand? But the demigods aren't necessarily looking at it, wife means sense gratification, wife means partner. Right? So in other words, you need two halves to complete the equation. Does that make sense? So they're engaged in administration. And what's the reason that there's administration? Because there's social life. Right? So that means the social scene. Without the wife, how is that complete? How are you complete in that social environment? Does that make sense? Yeah, so the weakness is you think wife means sense gratification. No, wife means partner. You understand? Just like, let's say you have a car, right? Most gentlemen will think of it, the guy, he has a nice car, it'll work, gets him to work and back. It's also socially works, people will consider he's an okay guy, successful. But is that how his teenage son sees the car? It's not a social, it's a sense gratification. You get in the car, get the keys when you can, and take it for a wild ride with his friends, hanging out and drinking beer and throwing cans everywhere and, hopefully not running anything over or getting too many tickets, right? But, hey, does that make sense? So that's the difference. The demigods are mature, so their wife is a partner. Does that make sense? If you're going to engage the senses, then you need the whole environment. So that includes the wife. Right? So that's the point of the Vedic literatures, is how to engage that situation of husband and wife in the Lord's service. Prachina Barhishad is just following the Vedic system, is very pious. But he's missed the point. He doesn't add Krishna consciousness. Because the point is the husband is Jiva, the wife is Jiva, so they're both servants of the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yeah. Because if that's understood, then marriages generally go a bit better. If you're thinking marriage simply means sense gratification, you're in for a surprise. Does that work? Last point. Yes. That's right.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the lovely class. We've been dealing with the side of action, and so therefore karma, so they're engaging. On the other hand, when you look at these topics coming from a Gyan point of view, we have the tendency to just think that everything is useless, it doesn't have any value.
Except for our opinion, of course. Our opinion's always the most valuable.
So, could we also apply the point that unless it's Krishna conscious, this Gyan...
Yeah, Gyan means... That's the, see, karma is generally the big problem. But Gyan is also a problem. Like I mentioned before, this idea is that, okay, we're Krishna consciousness. Krishna conscious, so we don't enjoy it. We take prasad, but if we think it's nice, then that's Maya. Point is that's like saying, you know, Krishna's dressed so nicely, oh, if I think he looks beautiful, that's Maya. You understand? The point is everything's beautiful in the world because it is Krishna. You understand? Krishna is the superior quality that we're attracted to. The lack of that, right? In other words, in its natural state, then everything works very smoothly. Human beings can either act within the recommendation of Shastra, therefore to function within the superior qualities. So everything stays very nice. We see these Vedic culture. You know, it's given in the scriptures, it's very nice. But if we don't work according to that, then we're not working with the superior qualities, we're working with the lack of them. So lack of the quality, then is not nice. Right? Does that make sense? Means the person is merciful, we consider that good. He lacks mercy, that we'll say is bad. It's not that the lack of mercy is its own thing. It's the, you know what I'm saying, darkness is not its own entity. It's just the lack of light. So all bad qualities, we would say, are simply a lack of good ones. Does that make sense? So therefore, the tendency is on the, we understand by working we get results, and by results we'll be happy. Right? But our attitude in which we look at that also is very important. So devotees, it's a mix of the two. That's why Buddha Yoga addresses both karma and jnana. Right? If it only addresses karma, there'll be a problem. So it has to address the element that if we're not the body, that means then we can use it properly in Krishna's service. We take it, if I'm not the body, I don't engage it. Right? But who says that? Mayavadis. Right? Because if the material endeavor with the senses and emotions and relationships creates so much pain, spiritual means no engagement of the senses. Right? So since I don't want the results of karma, I perform no karma. Right? Does that make sense? And the karmi, then, by knowledge, then it makes it too obvious. It ruins your, you know, material endeavor, right? So ignorance in this case is bliss, right? So therefore we vacillate between I make the endeavor, but don't get too philosophical. I'm just being practical, right? Or I get philosophical, and therefore I do nothing. But both of them are wrong. You're taking the wrong half of each. No, endeavor that gets result, that's the good part of karma, because the result can be offered to Krishna. And the knowledge part of jnana, where you understand the material world, there's nothing here, is the valuable part. But the aspect of not doing work, that's the useless part. So therefore, you combine those with the knowledge that it means where the material gives no benefit and that we're serving to Krishna. Therefore, I'll engage the activities of karma so the results for Krishna. So endeavor with knowledge, that's chit potency. So we like to either endeavor or have endeavor, no knowledge, or knowledge and no endeavor. But chit means knowledge and endeavor combined. So it's spiritual knowledge and the appropriate mechanical endeavor. That's Buddha Yoga. Right? So then that works very nice. But we tend to do one or the other. That's why it says it's a razor's edge. One side's karma, one side's jnana. So we tend to always go, by habit, go into one or the other. Because we're not used. Because spiritual is the only thing that can create the balance in the middle. There is no middle. There's no balance in material. There's no middle path on the material platform. It doesn't exist. It's one or the other. Spiritual is the middle path. So then you have to be doing that to please Krishna, right? Does that make sense? There's an illusion that, no, there is a material middle path. It doesn't exist. If it exists, how is it so many intelligent, observant, active people have not been able to find it in, you know, so many thousands of years of Western culture? They haven't found it because it doesn't exist. Right? But we see the sages and all that, then they're handing down to the parampara this balance. And they've had it, you know, since time immemorial. So the Vedic has always had it, and non-Vedic has never found it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Something, yes.
You mentioned that in 2,000 years no one's found this, but in certain cultures, in the European culture, they used to have a more religious culture, much more religious culture. They pray three times a day and so forth. In the Islamic cultures, they pray three times or five times a day and so forth. So like that, in some of these different cultures, we see that there is still a lot of prayer going on, a lot of offering of self to God and dependence on God. And yet we still see so much disruption. Of course, a lot of that changed with the Industrial Revolution. You know, people just became absorbed in things. But still, in some countries, we see, like in the Islamic countries, they're having so much fighting with each other over tiny technical points of philosophy. And so how is that, you know, still they're praying three times a day or five times a day, but they're still, you know, at each other's throats. How is that happening?
Because it's still, why are they praying to God? It's not to, you know, generally speaking, it's not to develop love for Him who comes in the transcendental platform. It's how, you know, to be happy materially. You understand? So as soon as there's the endeavor for material happiness, then the difficulty comes up, then they'll be fighting. Right? And that's taking a culture where the religion and the lifestyle is integrated. But if you take the European, the lifestyle and the religion aren't integrated. There is no... means if you take it by Christianity, there is no Christian food or dress or way of, you know... Is there a Christian rule you have to brush your teeth or not? Or how would you brush your teeth? Or, you know, do you have to take a bath? How often do you take a bath, you know? So there's no rules. So the difficulty comes is that, generally speaking, except for, it means most all non-Christian religions define a lifestyle. Christianity absolutely doesn't. You know, it's you could say it's unique, outstanding character. It absolutely does not touch on lifestyle, like, other than being good and nice. And all other religions and cultures of the world, their feature is they all deal with lifestyle. That's why Christians can never understand other cultures like that. That's their, you know, that's the first thing you do is remove the culture. You establish Christianity by removing the culture. You don't establish Christianity by adding the monotheistic concept to their lifestyle. You remove their lifestyle, and then you introduce whatever is the popular thing in Europe at the time. Like that. So, religion isn't enough. Religion has to be connected to the Lord. So that's sad-dharma. Because then the soul is praying to God on the spiritual platform. So in other words, God's spiritual, the soul's spiritual, and the prayer is spiritual. But religion is simply what is the proper way of dealing with the particular entity in that particular situation. What is the appropriate way of dealing according to God's laws. That's religion. But now, whether you're using that religion for sense gratification or economics or social status or emotional interaction or for spiritual or for devotional, that's then the consciousness of the living entity. So
that consciousness is not defined in the religion. Present day religion, you don't see that they define consciousness other than being good and nice. Right? And that's only the ones you hear about. It means if a religion doesn't define that there's a supreme and that you have to be good in your dealing with others, it will not become popular. Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes this point, because if there's not a supreme, then how do you know that there's an authority? How do you know that it goes up the sun? If everything's equal, then you get bewildered. Right? So it can't become popular. Right? A few guys, you know, sitting in a French cafe, maybe they can get into it, but everybody else won't. And if there's not being good to others, that means if you're not good, then where's my opportunity for sense gratification? If you're being nice, I have an opportunity also. But if you're not being nice, you may be better at it than me or more powerful, so I'll get nothing. So religion can only spread if it has these two things. That means religion being that process of that. But now Saddharma, that's what cuts through all this and goes beyond that. Then you can have the element that can cooperate. So any element of non-cooperation is simply the material conditioning. Like that. But if you follow what's defined by the laws, it should make it regulate, so it'll make it better. So the Vedic gets into the most detail and most scientific on how to regulate everything in the social structure, so you have the minimal. But in any case, the others have, specifically for that particular time, place, and circumstance, the particular people, that area, and everything like that. So that. Does that make sense? Yes. Okay, this will be last question.
Maharaj, I don't really understand that the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said we are not the doer, and then at the same time he said he also not the doer. Then, as I know that actually as an individual soul have a desire, then Paramatma is the one who fulfill the desire of the soul, right? Then let's say, because at the same time, then the time is different to the tree. It's the past, present, and the future, right? So let's say now got two person, they at the same time they're conducting the present activity, but the activity they have a same desire, but there is only have a one winner, you know. They mean that how the Paramatma were fulfilled, there's only have a one winner. Let's say now have a two person, let's say want to win a competition or whatever, you know. So it's Paramatma is want to fulfill which person desire. It's based on the how strong is the desire of the
person. Oh, if two people are doing it's just karma.
Let's say it's just a present activity, they are conducting the present activity.
But the point is like this. Let's say you have two people, they have passbooks. Right, for their bank. Mm-hmm. They both go to the teller at the window and they both want money. Mm-hmm. Okay? So is that a problem? Is it a problem? You want money from the bank, someone else wants money from the bank. Is that a problem? It's two different accounts.
Yes, they both have the same desire.
Yeah, okay. So the point is you have $100 in your account, you get that. They have $1,000, they get that. So it's not a problem that both can be fulfilled at once. We can't figure out how to do all at once. But Maya, you know, that's what she does. So she's good at it.
Let's say it's a competition.
In a competition, yeah, but this point is why is somebody more attractive, or why does somebody have a better skill? That's because what they're doing right now, or what they did before?
The desire?
No, desire is there, but what desire? Not the desire now. You have a desire, but let's say the girl walks down the ramp. What is she walking down the ramp with? Her desire? or the body that's been generated from her previous desire. You understand? Previous life, she lived a particular lifestyle. Because of that, she has a particular amount of beauty and a particular amount of skill and a particular amount of intelligence. You understand? She's walking down the ramp with that. So the one who did more last lifetime is the one that wins this lifetime. You understand? It's simple.
I understand. You mean that it's, let's say the person have the design is from the past, they have a same kind of, they have a previous experience, then create a desire, right? Then the desire again will come back again, they have a same desire.
The desire will just remain. You've cultivated a desire, so therefore it comes up.
How about the result? The result. The result. Yeah.
The result. What about the result?
Let's say,
You means your result is based on the one before that. See, so last lifetime the girl lived in a certain way, but that's based on her previous life before that, how she lived then. Therefore, she gets a facility this life that she could be more or less pious.
But let's say it's a competition. Let's say that now the competition is
You're performing an activity in the present, but you're getting the results from the past.
No.
But your desire in the present will create your results in the future.
But can be the, yes, the past is the, maybe it's 1 hour ago, then now is the result is appearing.
No, here, let's get down. What is your actual question?
The question is how the Paramatma to want to, based on what to fulfill the individual soul. It's based on the how strong the, let's say the previously the A is have a stronger desire than the B, that's why the Paramatma is fulfill the A desire, or maybe it's
no, but the point is you're looking at that it's only A or B. Mm-hmm. They'll all get their desire filled if they deserve it.
Yeah, but let's say it's just only have a one winner, that's why.
You have a one winner there, but there's other lifetimes, there's other competitions. The point is you have the desire, but you don't have the piety. Just like you go to the bank, you have $100 in the bank, you'd love to pull out a million, but you can't. You don't have the credit. So the point is the one that wins has more credit, and the one that loses doesn't. It's simple. So therefore, you act in such a way, if that's really important to you, be pious, be nice, be good, deal nicely according to the rules, and then next lifetime you can win the pageant. You know what I'm saying? Because people are here for a long time. But our point is why worry about it? Go back to Godhead. You know, everybody looks good over there. You know what I'm saying?
But of course,
you know what I'm saying? Everybody wins.
But of course that the... Because you want to go to preach, at least you have to understand the philosophy also.
Yeah, but yes, the point is you have free will in the present to deal with the results of your previous endeavors. What you've done in the past is your predestiny now. What you do with it now, that's your free will.
Mm-hmm. So
you understand? Let us say you say, I want pancakes for breakfast, okay? That was your free will. Now, whoever's cooking it, cooks it. Now, what ends up on your plate? What will be on your plate? Pancakes, right? So that's predestiny from your previous desire. Now, what you do with it, that's your free will. You can eat them, you can throw them around the room, you can do whatever you want. But now if you eat them, then there's a good chance when you ask again, they'll make again. But if you take them and throw them around the room, there's a good chance you don't have the karma for getting them, so therefore, you even if you ask, you desire, you won't get.
You mean Paramatma, not only based on the desire, it's also based on the prior activity to...
It's a combination. You have a desire, but you also have to have the facilities. Right? You have to have the facilities.
Although it's a desire, is you are hurting another person or whatever?
But that's your desire.
Yeah.
It works. But the point is the person who has a desire to hurt someone else, but you also have justice. Right? Karma means just. So that means next life, that person will be the one that's hurting you. Do you understand? So the people who are causing pain in this life are the ones who last life were in pain. And the ones that are in pain this life are the ones that are causing the pain last life. It just keeps going round and round. I mean, they do this for a long time. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki, Jaya Nityananda.